We all know that the concentration camps, they say we're liberated. On this day, Auschwitz was liberated. None of the camps were liberated. There was no military action to liberate them, to free the inmates. There was military action to bomb ports and ball bearing factories and bridges. The concentration camps were discovered accidentally while troops were on their way to Berlin, and they inadvertently freed the people, and they didn't even know what to do with them. So there was no plan, but they always knew that. They always knew what was going on. So today, I'm going to give you a deeper understanding, not only of the forces that were underneath the Holocaust, but the forces that put those forces into motion. We're going to go back in history. I've devoted my entire life to this type of research, investigation, and revelation. And the answer is that my parents were both Holocaust survivors. And my mother was pushed out of a train on the way to Treblinka by her mother. And she was buried in a mass grave. My father was a partisan. And he discovered her, her legs sticking out of the snow. And they lived in the woods for 2 years. So today I was asked at lunch if I would not mention this as well. And this is going to describe my mother being pushed out of the train by her mother and my daughter talking to her daughter. How it has always been a desire of the best thinkers in the world to kill people they didn't think had a right to live. Everything you're going to see here is from the internet. These are live internet links. And you can replicate this on your own with a few words into Google. This is from Plato's Republic. You have in your house hunting dogs and a number of pedigree cocks. Do not some prove better than the rest? Or do you breed indiscriminately? What we must do is get rid of the ones that we do not wish to live. This is what they did in ancient Sparta. They examined the child in the Greeks, and if the child did not resemble a warrior, they threw him down a pit to die of exposure. Next. And this is the pit. This pit was called the depository. That is where they deposited the children they did not want to live. So I want you to understand the traditions of mass murder, organized murder, come from our best thinkers. And we have next Aristotle. And Aristotle said, let there be a law that no deformed child shall live, but that on the ground of an excess in the number of children, if the established customs of the state forbid this, no child is to be exposed. But when couples have children in excess, let abortion be procured before sex and life have begun. What may or may not be lawfully done in these cases depends on the question of life and sensation. Next. These were the Roman laws of the 12 tables, which were which inspired the Magna Carta. It says right here in table 4, a dreadfully deformed child shall be quickly killed. No effort to care for our human beings. And of course, who is the one who will play God and decide? Next. And now we switch to the United States, where American eugenics went rampant and resulted in the mass sterilization of 67,000 people and the forced surgical sterilization of many others, and other atrocities which I shall explain. But why did it happen? It's not enough to know what happened. We must ask why. This is the United States, and at the end of the 19th century, there were Jews coming in and other East Europeans, hundreds of thousands, due to the disruptions of the Tsar and other persecutions in Eastern Europe. There were Chinese who had come in here to build the railroads. Here we see half of Mexican territory, which was ceded to the United States in 1848 after the Treaty of Hidalgo. And suddenly all these Mexicans are in the United States. We have the slaves are freed. The Indians are off the reservation. There's a lot of marriage, intermarriage. And the people who controlled the elite circles of the United States wanted to turn back the clock. They wanted it the way it was. And who were these people? These people were the bankers. These people were the college professors, the scientists, the judges, the best. And many of them had German extraction. Now, how did so many Germans get to the United States? Really, it involves the press of wheat. Next. Russian Mennonites arrived in the United States and developed winter wheat. The St. Lawrence Seaway was opened up, and the American South no longer needed German wheat. They could get Minnesota wheat. They could get American wheat. That immediately dropped the price of wheat. And in Germany, there was an economic collapse on the farm, and many people from the farm moved to the cities where there were no jobs. They slept on the street. They developed the notion of a people without a space. And over a period of years, 25 million of them came to the United States, packed in boats like this in the second half of the 19th century. They came to such cities as St. Louis. They came to Milwaukee and many other locations. Settled America, and with them they brought their German sense of superiority, racial superiority, and their sensibilities, in addition to their beer and their sausage. They brought these attitudes. Next. This developed a concept which you have heard referred to in World War II from Adolf Hitler, but in fact it was developed at the end of the 19th century, called Lebensraum. Lebensraum means we need room, because we have no room in the cities, because the price of wheat in the United States has forced all the people from the farm into our cities, and we need Lebensraum. And where were they going to get the Lebensraum? Africa. And this developed the scramble for Africa at the end of the 19th century. The French came down, the Germans came down, the British came down, and the Germans came down in one of their four locations, Cameroon, Togoland, East Africa, was this place, German Southwest Africa, now known as Namibia. They came in, they took over, they enslaved the people. One of their missions was to stop the Arab slave trade. In the Berlin Conference, they had organized
the scramble for Africa. They said, we will stop the Arabs who would kidnap 15 million Africans with a 70% mortality rate. Stop them from exporting these people. Instead, we'll keep these people on the land and they'll work for our plantations. A benefit. They came down here, there was women were raped, land was stolen, cattle were stolen, and the Herero people and the Nama people rose up, and as a result of that, the Germans sent down a military group to exterminate them. And the word they used was Vernichtung, which means extermination. And they did exterminate about 90% of them. It's a different speech, but I just want you to know, these guys who did this were the original brown shirts, wearing brown. These guys developed racial laws, developed the idea of putting people on trains, developed not tattoos but tags. They murdered these people, and then they drove them into the desert and poisoned the water holes. And when they were not quite ready to die, the soldiers would find them, put them on top of each other, still living, and set them on fire like so much timber would. Next. The Belgians, the ones telling the world about morality, were in Africa, not during ancient times, at the same time that I'm discussing here. And as you can see, if the children did not deliver enough rubber, they cut their hands off. This is Brussels, home of the European Parliament. Hit this thing here. Here's a father looking at his children's hands. Next. After that. And here's a man holding a number of hands. The Arab slave trade had so demolished Africa that European colonialization could come in and devastate those people. Next. And when the Germans were done killing these people in the first extermination camp called Shark Island, I know you think the first genocide of the 20th century was 1.4 Armenians killed by the Turks. It was actually in 1906 when the Germans destroyed in an organized fashion 90% of the Hereros. And something else occurred. When they destroyed them, they experimented on them medically. And they cooperated with all kinds of scientific institutions around the world. Next. This is an example of a picture of what was done to the Herero people in German Southwest Africa. This became a trading card for a chocolate company. This actual picture. Next. These are the trains, not going to Auschwitz, but to Shark Island, that were innovated to exterminate these people in an organized fashion. Next. And the women were instructed to take the heads and skulls of their own kinfolk, shave them off with broken glass, and shipped the skulls to scientific institutions all over the world, the most scientific institutions, to study what they considered to be subhuman people. Next. And here is a picture of them loading up the skulls. They're still trying to get these skulls back from Germany. And this too became a trading card. By the way, these guys became the Freikorps in Germany. Their leader hired a guy called Adolf Hitler, started a newspaper called Völkischer Beobachter, which was the Nazi Party paper. And although they wore black shirts for most of the Nazis, they remembered this and they had brown shirts. Next. And we see a scientist, one scientist, one, Eugen Fischer, who wrote about the Rehoboth bastards. And this one guy talked about the decline of mankind when you mix the races. Mix the races, racial suicide. Long before the Nazis were even thinking about that terminology, there was this guy, Eugen Fischer, who became the inspiration to the American eugenics movement. Now, what was the American eugenics movement? It was an organization devoted to the betterment of mankind. Many organizations, not just one. And they thought that the best way to improve society was to get rid of everybody who they thought was responsible for bringing society down. They thought it wasn't in you as much as in your children or your children's children. And in point of fact, their theory was to get rid of 10% of the United States at a time, a slice at a time, until there was no one left except those who resembled themselves. And they based many of their bastardized theories on broken, fake, and inaccurate science. Next. These were not bad guys in masks in the backyard. This is the Racial Betterment Society in Battle Creek, Michigan, run by Henry Kellogg of the Kellogg Cereal Company. I was actually in this building. And this Racial Betterment Society inspired the Mexican Racial Betterment Society, which resulted in forced sterilization here, especially in Veracruz in 1932. Next. What was going on? They thought that black people were talking baboons. They didn't think they were actual human beings, but baboons that could speak. And here's the proof, Otto Benga. This was an African kept in a cage in the Bronx Zoo with the monkeys. Next. And here's the New York Times Man and Monkey Show disapproved by clergy. New York Times said, what's the problem? He's getting three meals a day. Next. Bushman shares a cage with Bronx Park apes. This guy ultimately got a college education. But the state of the art of science was that the world was divided up into a few human beings and mostly subhuman beings. And the liberals, the progressives, the do-gooders, and the utopians thought that they could make a better world by getting rid of the people
who were engaged in crime, prostitution, etc.
They thought that you were not born into poverty. Poverty was born into you as a genetic trait. That you were not thrown into prostitution. You had a prostitution gene. In fact, that's how eugenics got into Mexico, as a way to fight prostitution.
Next.
All these theories began from Darwin's cousin in London at the end of the 19th century. He really had a wacky, non-malevolent idea. He thought that if you could take intelligent, wealthy, talented men and marry them to wealthy, intelligent, talented women, out would come wealthy, intelligent children. He was not a scientist. He was actually an observer of patterns. He was one of the main discoverers of fingerprints. He was one of the leading espousers of barometric maps for meteorology. He thought he could spot a pattern anywhere. In fact, he thought that he could make a map and a predictability chart for all the ugly women in Great Britain. Comes out here, and as you can see, he's not exactly a good-looking guy. Let's try this one here. Next one. There's nothing good-looking about that, but he thought that he could identify all the ugly women in Great Britain. In fact, he's so ugly, I'd like to get it. Let's look at something better. Okay, good. Now, these theories were corrupted and bastardized in the United States by these same elites who wanted to turn back the clock, but who lacked the scientific rationales. And it occurred at the same time that Mendel's principles of heredity were rediscovered. Next. This is Gregor Mendel. This is the guy who did the famous experiment on the peas. And his manuscripts were lost. They were rediscovered in 1901. Next. And if you remember, that you could take the striped pea and the clear pea, and somewhere along the way, the descendants would be partially striped and partially clear. And there was no way around that. That was genetic science. So the eugenicists of the United States were ranchers, cattlemen, horse breeders, farmers, and they thought the best way to improve society was to get rid of the bad stock and accentuate the good stock. Once again, because they were utopians. Anybody in the room know what utopia means in Greek? It means nowhere. So even the Greeks knew utopia was an unattainable destination. Next. And they said, it doesn't matter how good you are as a man, how wealthy you are as a man. Somewhere in your progeny, somewhere in your next generations, would come out evil people, prostitutes, poverty, alcoholics. And consequently, once we've identified you as an enemy, a genetic enemy of the state, you must be eliminated. Innocent, guilty, doesn't matter. It's a future crime. A future crime. Next. All the stupid ideas about race, race science, can go nowhere, can never escape the backyard, the back room, and turn into a big movement, unless they have one thing: money. Corporate money. And the men of philanthropy, the men of the great foundations and charitable organizations, believed in eugenics, and they spent their millions to make sure that eugenics was established in the United States and eventually throughout the world. One of them was Andrew Carnegie, the Carnegie Institution. Second, next, John D. Rockefeller from the Rockefeller Foundation, who always believed that prostitution could be eliminated if you killed off anyone you thought was potentially capable of having a prostitute in their lineage. Next. E.H. Harriman, the railroads. The guy who was made many, many millions, these are the robber barons. And when he died, his money was put to use to establish a eugenic station on Long Island that developed these theories. Next. And it was done by his wife, Mary Harriman, who was also taken in by this incredible pseudoscience. Next. And this building was developed in Cold Spring Harbor. It's been changed now. You'll never find it. I can find it. But they've changed the facade. And in here, they trapped people's lineage. They took gossip. They took medical diagnosis. They took family trees. They put them all together, and they imagined who would be a threat to the country and to society, who should live and who should die. Next. And they had all these files. Now, what was going to be done with these files? They had to be organized. They were put on cardboard index cards. Next. They had an international meeting. The government helped them, the Department of Agriculture, because of course we were raising a better human being the same way you raise a better herd of cattle. And they said, we will, this was international, here are the methods we will use to get rid of people and to improve society. Next. Life segregation, concentration camps in America were established in many states called mental health and other sanatoriums, juvenile delinquency homes, where people would be confined under the fake claim of a medical diagnosis. Sterilization, restrictive marriage laws. They wanted to make laws to criminalize people from one race marrying another race. Who were the races? Southern Italians, Hispanics, Chinese, Jews, and even white people with brown hair. They thought that white people with brown hair were bastard, mongrel Caucasians, because these Germans espoused one element that they believed was scientific fact: the world was to be dominated by blonde, blue-eyed, white Germanic peoples, like their fathers. Blonde, blue-eyed, white Germanic peoples. And they seized the power. And ultimately, the number one process for getting rid of these people was gas chambers. 0.8 euthanasia. We're now talking several decades before Hitler came to power. The first law for public gas chambers in the United States was entered into the state of Ohio in 1908. Obviously, these laws would not pass. So because they could not pass gas chambers, which they always held on to as the best idea for eugenics, the next best one, forced surgical sterilization. And so I say 67,000 people, at least, and probably many more on the Indian reservations, were forcibly sterilized, most without their knowledge, most were tricked. And none of this was done by the people in the South with Confederate flags. This was done by the brightest and the best. The Bar Association, the Medical Association, the legislature in 27 states, not just one. Next. And helping them around the United States and even overseas was the Psychopathic Laboratory, a completely fake medical institution which printed up all this information and delivered it as though it was scientific fact. They had invented their own medical journals. They had invented their own medical programs, fellowships. They were self-certifying each other. And the Psychopathic Laboratory was in Chicago. And who ran it? Come down lower. The Municipal Court of Chicago. The Municipal Court, for those of you who don't know, is a court that specializes in parking tickets, speeding tickets. We're not talking about a federal forum. We're talking about a local place, that a local court that handles petty matters, not even state crimes. Next. And this is the chief judge of the municipal court. His name was Harry Olson, who doubled as the president of the American Eugenics Society. His court was responsible for sending juvenile delinquents to the middle of Illinois, a sanitarium in Lincoln, Illinois, where the juvenile delinquents were forced to drink milk from tubercular cows, and if they lived, they could live another day. Otherwise, they were meant to die. Darwin said natural selection, and they said lethal selection. Next. And they believed that crime would stop if only the criminals and the people descended from criminals, the so-called born criminals, this term born criminals, would be eliminated. This was the science. This was not the whisper, the racist whisper in the barroom. This was the peak of scientific thought, which was implemented by the best academicians at Harvard, Yale, Princeton, University of Indiana, Stanford, throughout the United States. Next. And the American Medical Association, one of the fathers of modern surgery, L. Albert Oxner, also in Chicago, said we will indeed stop crime if we can just sterilize or otherwise neutralize or otherwise subtract criminals. They couldn't wait for a law, so they went into Indiana, into the prison, and they took some people and they sterilized them without their permission. Next. And in 1907, a eugenics law followed that allowed forced surgical sterilization. Next. There was even a movie in Chicago called The Black Stork, where a baby was malnourished and to a certain degree, misformed. And the parents pleaded, help my baby. And the top surgeon, Harry Hofstein, refused and said, this baby does not deserve to live. It's a life not worth living. Worthless eaters, as would later be called. He let the baby die, and then they said it was such a good idea, they made a Hollywood movie about it. Chicago was an epicenter of this. Indeed, I can tell you that the Mexican racists who developed the sterilization laws in Veracruz in 1932 began their thought processes with a series of speeches at the University of Chicago, where they fleshed out their ideas. Next. Well, they have these laws. But in point of fact, the laws were not implemented because the governor said, these laws are unconstitutional. We have a state law that says we're going to physically sterilize people because we believe their children may one day be socially or societally unacceptable. So they came up in Virginia with the idea of a collusive lawsuit. Now, what do I mean by that? They found a woman called Carrie Buck. Carrie Buck had been raped by the sheriff's nephew. She was what in America they sometimes would call white trash. They said, we want to sterilize Carrie Buck, her newborn baby, and her mother. Three generations. And in those days, the medical term, the scientific term, for a person with low intelligence was moron, imbecile. These were not insults. These were technical terms of intelligence testing. They took her and they said, two eugenicists got together. They said, you'll be the defense counsel, I'll be the prosecutor. We'll conspire together. I'll sue you, you'll sue me. We'll go to the appellate court and ultimately to the Supreme Court. And it went indeed to the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Carrie Buck was diagnosed by people from the Chicago Municipal Court based on a photograph, based on no information whatsoever. And the greatest, one of the greatest jurists in the United States. And who do I mean? I mean Oliver Wendell Holmes, the famous name. I'll be speaking at UNAM to the law school, and they'll be very interested in these legal matters. Next. And then came the famous case delivered by Oliver Wendell Holmes. Just come down a little bit. Buck versus Bell. Opinion coming down. More. They invented a term called feeble-minded. It was a medical diagnosis. How do you measure it? We can't measure it, but we know when we see it. Come down. A little more. Further, please. Get the right here. Okay. They said, it is better for all the world if three generations of imbeciles are eliminated rather than be executed for their crime in the future. Three generations of imbeciles are enough. Supreme Court. Based on that, and the basis was compulsory vaccination. So they thereby established the idea that certain people were subhuman and bacterial, a virus to society itself, and had to be eliminated. The
This is in the 20s.
Next. That opened the floodgates,
and now sterilization was going on everywhere in the United States. Sometimes they would give a girl a comic book, and they would say, do you like these comic books? Do you want us to do something to help you? She would say, sure. They sent her off to the sterilization mill, and they came back, and she would be sterilized. Most of the people sterilized were, of course, women. Decision Health stepped towards super race. They knew what they were doing. It was their intention to develop a master race where only they would abide. And that master race would be blonde, blue-eyed, white, and Germanic. Next. Now, how do you organize this with all these index cards? Well, they made a pilot test. IBM took the cards and inaugurated the Jamaica Race Crossing Project. This is the actual document. As the first step to eliminating the existence of all black people on planet Earth. This ultimately became the pilot program for how IBM organized the mass murder of 6 million Jews. You can hear about that tomorrow. Next. And they had their scientists, Ernst Rudin. And these are people in Cold Spring Harbor, Long Island. And they're standing there with their many pages, making up fabricated diagnoses, fabricated links, having their fabricated colleagues give them fabricated justification for eliminating their bloodlines. Next. And these were translated into German by the Nazi publishing company. And who do we see is an author? Eugen Fischer, the same guy who was involved in 1906, 1908, the destruction of the Hereros by the proto-Nazis in German Southwest Africa. These books were studied by Adolf Hitler. And Adolf Hitler came to the belief that he could now take his concept of racial superiority, his concept of militant nationalism and fascism, and medicalize it. Give it an injection of science. And believe that he would improve the world by getting rid of the Jews and the Poles and everyone else that did not qualify. He even wrote in Mein Kampf, the United States is the only place that has figured out the solution to these problems. Next. Whereas Cold Spring Harbor and the American eugenicists could not afford IBM, the Nazis could afford it because they stole so much information, so much, money from so many Jews, so many socialists, so many others, that they could turn that money back into IBM. And this is one of the machines. This machine was on display in the United States Holocaust Museum until my book came out. Then it was removed, and no one knows why, and replaced with another machine where IBM's name can hardly be read. Of course, a huge series of cooperation between IBM and the Holocaust museums and organizations ensued. There was, by the way, 24 of those, or machines like those, at Dachau. And there was, in fact, an IBM customer site in every concentration camp. It was with machines like this that the Nazis, with IBM's guidance and planning, executed all six phases of the Holocaust. The identification of the Jews, census, registration. The expulsion from society, compare the registered names to the law rolls. The medical bar association, the medical association, the faculty rolls. Throw them all out. Step three, pauperization. All the banks are running on IBM punch cards. Take the Jewish money, Aryanize the accounts, Aryanize the assets. Step four, ghettoization. The marvel of IBM traffic management. Step five, deportation. All the trains are running on IBM punch cards. Step six, extermination. They even developed the extermination by labor program that compared slave laborers to labor needs and then worked them to death. There was a customer site in every concentration camp. Next. This is an example of one of the custom punch cards that was made. This was before computers. By the way, this was not three guys in the basement of IBM. This was all micromanaged by the sociopathic war criminal, Thomas J. Watson, who was the president of IBM, was already a convicted extortionist before he ever came there. And so there was one of these special cards. This is the astronaut of the SS for every single application. Next. And the Americans were supplying money, scientific know-how. Rockefeller was building the Kaiser Wilhelm Institutes. And there's even a letter here. You'll be interested to know that your work, this is one of the foundations for human betterment, has played a powerful part in shaping the opinions of the group of intellectuals who are behind Hitler in this epoch-making program. Everywhere I sense, the guy says after going to Germany, that their opinions have been tremendously stimulated by American thought, and particularly by the work of the Human Betterment Foundation, a branch of which was developed in Veracruz. I want you, my dear friend, to carry this thought with you for the rest of your life. You have really jolted into action a great government of 50 million people. America knew what was going on. The Journal of the American Bar Association reported on these activities. Next. And this is Harry Laughlin, who became the federal eugenics officer. Many historians have asked, why did Jews not get permits to travel to the United States and get their visas? It's because this man, funded by the Carnegie Institution, working for the eugenics office in Cold Spring, Long Island, went to the consuls one by one and talked about the racial poison that would come into the United States if the Jews were given visas to escape Nazi Germany and come to American shores. And by the way, even though I just accused IBM of consciously engaging in the mass murder of 6 million Jews, tomorrow morning, IBM Mexico will say nothing. No letter to the rabbi, no phone call from the lawyers, nothing. If you ask them, they'll say, we have no information. You'll see nothing. Next. And here, Rockefeller Foundation is funding the Nazi doctors of Europe, of Germany, whose mission it is to dismantle and diagnose the genetic characteristics of the Jews and eliminate them as a living force on the world.
And they are not only scientists, they're not only doctors, they're doctrinaire Nazis. Giving the Nazi salute. And who is this guy? Eugen Fischer. The same guy who started out in 1906 in Africa. Next. And his mentor, excuse me, his prodigy, was Otmar Vischer. And Otmar Vischer took the place of Eugen Fischer and became the top Nazi doctor, determined to mass murder the Jews, but not until he could unlock the secret of the mass subtraction of one group of people and the mass multiplication of another. And it was him who developed the idea of twin experiments. Twin experiments. Goebbels actually put out an order, and it wasn't Goebbels, it was Himmler, put out an order that all twins must report to this guy. And this guy had the systems. Next. Mengele. Mengele went into Auschwitz to finish the research on twins. And there's no survivor who has written any memoir or letter who does not remember that when the trains arrived at Auschwitz with the barking dogs and the screaming soldiers and the crying babies, they heard one word above everything else, and one word was shouted twice, twins, twins, we need twins. And those twins were taken to Mengele's private laboratory where one was infected and the other was not. One was injected with blue in the eye and the other with brown in the eye. In one case, two bodies were fused together with their arteries and their veins into some type of abomination. And every weekend, he's sending his reports by motorcycle. Live autopsies. Live autopsies. Motorcycling surgical reports to his Rockefeller-funded boss, Otmar Fischer. Next. The Nazis were defeated finally in May 8th of 1945. Naturally, the war against the Jews continued in the Middle East when 2,000 Nazis, Gestapo, SS, escaped via the Rat Line in Odessa into German positions to make up the modern Middle East. That'll be another discussion. But the idea of Nazism lived on, even after the war, even in America. And people were still being sterilized after 1945 based on these presumed imaginary characteristics, with presumed imaginary future crime by maybe potentially visible new generations. And here, okay, that was the, let's go back to the last one. No, that one there, the next one. Right there. This is the North Carolina sterilization report for 1935. It specifically cites the German sterilization statistics and says, look how far we have to go to catch up with the Germans. Because what did the Germans do? The Germans implemented American principles, American ideals of eugenics with incredible velocity and ferocity. And even though Hitler fell on May 8th, the laws lived on in the United States into the 1970s. Go to the last one. Black and poor people in North Carolina did not understand why they were sterilized.
I had to come in there and tell them it was not necessarily because of your race. It was not necessarily because of your poverty. It was some presumption of what your race and poverty would be in the future. It was all of you lumped into one subhuman category. These are the Riddicks, and I helped get them reparations, compensation. It was nothing, just a token admission on the long road toward rehabilitation of the state. And so what does all this teach us? This teaches us that when Yom HaShoah, observance of the Holocaust, when we say never again, we mean never again should American science, business, corporate muscle, diplomatic power be used to afflict innocent civilians. Thank you very much.